from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For years, Germany has been the patron, banker, backstop of European unity. It did well by doing good for Europe. Now, with the Greek debt crisis and its tough response, Germany is taking a lot of heat. Yes, Greece made a mess, say critics, but the German response looks brutal, bullying, putting European unity itself in question. This hour on Point, Germany, Greece, and the future of the European Union. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Has Germany gone too far with its demands? Is hard medicine required here? Does the Eurozone survive this? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. On Friday in Berlin, Chancellor Angela Merkel, speaking through an interpreter here, pushed for the German parliament to approve the Greek bailout. Here she is interpreted by CNN, talking very warmly about European unity.
No matter how large the differences are, we are going to engage and get involved in overcoming Greece's problem, because the EU and the euro is not only a currency, it is the fundamental concept of European unity.
Of course, on the streets of Athens, this was seen in quite different ways. People reacting to news. Here was a man who said he was a professor of European law, telling Sky News last week he thinks the deal is destructive.
The problem is that Germany wants to destroy Europe. What the people in England and around Europe should know is that Germany destroys Europe. Germany wants to enforce German discipline and austerity measures that will devastate Greek economy.
And there are critics of Germany well beyond Greece, but it's a tough, tough problem, and every family knows working out debt issues can be very emotional. With me now from Berlin is Hans Kund Nani. He's a senior transatlantic fellow with the German Marshall Fund of the United States, former research director at the European Council on Foreign Relations. He's author of The Paradox of German Power. Hans Kund Nani, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. There have been some pretty tough statements made in the last few days about Germany's very, very tough demands on Greece here. People calling it arrogant, people calling it overbearing, bringing to mind very old images of a Berlin not sympathetic to the needs of others. Has Germany gone too far?
I think that, I mean, this debate about German power in Europe and whether whether Europe is being kind of remade in a sense in Germany's image has been going on for 5 years. I think what happened at the weekend was that the rhetoric on both sides of this argument has taken on a new intensity, and there's more animosity, I think, on both sides. But as I say, this debate has been going on for 5 years since the euro crisis began. I think the place to start is that this is a standoff between creditor countries and debtor countries. And when the crisis began in Greece in 2010, Germany was thrust into this position of enormous power as the largest creditor in the Eurozone. And the German narrative of the crisis, which emerged, was that this was essentially a crisis which was caused by others rather than partly by Germany itself. We could talk about the causes of the crisis. I would argue that, and you said in your introduction that Greece made a mess. I would argue that the Eurozone collectively made a bit of a mess, and that Germany has some particular responsibility for that. But the narrative that emerged in Germany was that this was Greece's fault, and it was the fault of the debtors, and that Germany, because of the transformation of the German economy that had happened in the 2000s, Germany was a kind of a model for the rest of the Eurozone. And therefore, the solution to the crisis that emerged, which, to be fair, other Eurozone countries agreed with, this wasn't simply Germany, was that other countries should in essence become more like Germany. And so, as I say, what's happened over the last 5 years is Germany has tried, not always succeeded, but Germany has, I think it is fair to say that Germany has tried essentially to remake the Eurozone in its own image and to sort of turn it into a larger version of Germany. But the problem is that obviously there's been huge difficulties with doing that, and over the course of the last 5 years, as it's become sort of clearer and clearer that it's not working, Germany is, and other countries in the Eurozone have insisted on a sort of an ever tougher approach, ever tougher conditionality towards the debtor countries. And it seems to me that that, above all, is what's leading to the resentment that, for example, the Greek that you just interviewed expressed.
Everybody knows it's hard to work these things out, but there's so much history here, and it yeah. shadows these conversations. Our old friend Steve Erlanger in the New York Times, writing over the weekend about many seeing what they saw as a more aggressive, punishing, contemptuous tone from Germany toward Greece, the German leadership having perhaps undercut its moral authority, quoting Jürgen Habermas, saying that the Greeks have gambled away in one night, the Germans have gambled away in one night all the political capital that a better Germany had accumulated in half a century. Is the rift as deep as that, and is it reparable?
I don't know if it's reparable. I personally don't think it's reparable unless there's a dramatic shift of policy. I think this approach that the Eurozone has taken over the last 5 years isn't working. And at various stages, it seemed to me that there were moments where it looked like there was a kind of a wake-up call that might lead to a shift in policy, particularly the election of Alexis Tsipras in Greece at the beginning of this year, I thought might be a wake-up call. But instead, what's happened is that the Eurozone countries have kind of dug their heels in. I don't think that this approach that it can succeed, and I think that this kind of animosity will only get worse. And this is the tragedy, I think, of the Euro crisis. Of the single currency, actually, of the euro, that this project, which was meant to bring Europeans together, is actually pushing them apart. As you mentioned, there's been this kind of surge of collective memories, some of which go back to World War II, particularly in Greece, and expressions of nationalism that we thought were consigned to that had been consigned to the past in Europe have been coming back. And I think that is because, as you suggested, there is a history to this question of German power within Europe. I would obviously condemn the protesters on the streets of Athens who compare Merkel with Hitler. But at the same time, I think it is inevitable in this context that that those kind of collective memories are evoked. I don't see how, even if the current approach to the crisis is going to work in economic terms, and I'm not an economist, but the economists that I find most convincing are extremely skeptical that it will work in economic terms. But even if it were to work in economic terms, what I don't understand is how this approach will lead to Europeans kind of liking each other again. It feels to me as if this will lead to ever greater animosity between Europeans, as we've seen in the last 5 years.
Hans-Kunst Nani, please stand by there in Berlin. It's great to have you with us. With us right now from Bonn, Germany, is Constanze Stelzenmüller. She's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, works on German foreign policy and the European Union. Constanze Stelzenmüller, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
There have been very, very hard words toward Germany in the aftermath of this tough negotiation over Greece's debt. Of course, Greece has got itself in a heck of a pickle. It's made some real, real missteps, to say the very least, along the way. What do you make of the high tenor of upset with Germany in the aftermath of its tough position on these negotiations?
Well, I have to say, as a German, I have mixed feelings. I have a lot of sympathy for the Greeks, and I have some sympathy for the German position, but I certainly also have criticism of it and of the Greeks. So I'm on, firmly on both sides of the fence. I'll start with a thing that does worry me, though, and that is how quickly the tone of the criticism has boiled up, and how harsh some of the comparisons were, how quickly we were back at World War II and Nazi comparisons, and how all of this was focused on Germany, leaving out the fact that there are quite a lot of European countries who take the same position. That said, Germany is the currently economically most powerful country that in many ways is calling the shots, so I think we have to we have to take that as you know, it said, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. But you know, the loss of civility is a concern to me, but I actually would prefer to talk about the policy questions.
Look at the policy. Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman says that the German recipe here, quoting him here, and I'm sure you saw this last week, says, goes beyond harsh into pure vindictiveness, complete destruction of national sovereignty. Has Germany gone too far with its demands on Greece?
Okay. My problem with Mr. Krugman, Mr. Stieglitz, Jeffrey Sachs, and a number of others is that their critique of European and German economic policy prescriptions comes from, you know, outer left field. And I, you know, I am not an economist myself. A number of economists have, I think, dissected this position very ably. And all I can say is I think they genuinely don't get how the euro and the eurozone operate. Where I think the policy critique is right is in the on the following points. I think that we, in the last bailout in 2010, the biggest bailout, which basically benefited German and French banks, mm-hmm. who were major creditors of Greece, failed to understand, and I think my country's, Germany's government, failed to realize just how different Greece was from the case of the numerous other EU member states who had taken on these structural reforms, undergone quite a lot of national and individual suffering on a citizen level, but had come through it on the other side. And I think that the German government failed to understand just how fragile Greece's political institutions and its economy were, and that they just, you know, there isn't just isn't enough statehood, as it were, in Greece to implement these things.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Germany and the charge of bullying after the tough Greek bailout deal. Of course, the Greeks got themselves in a very deep hole, for which much of which Germany was the banker. Getting out of that is causing all kinds of woe right now. Hans Kundnani is with us from the German Marshall Fund of the United States, joins us from Berlin in Germany, author of The Paradox of German Power. Constanze Steltenmüller joins us from Bonn in Germany. She's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. You can join this conversation as well. What do you think? Has Germany's status as Europe's economic powerhouse now made it the political boss? Did Germany go too far in demanding everything of the Greeks? Is Europe now Germany's domain? Has the EU become a German takeover of Europe? Or has Germany found it necessary to sort of draw a line somewhere here and say this far and no farther? Of course, on the streets of Greece, where the pain is acute, so is the anger. Here from Sky News last week.
I'm full of rage, you know, for Mr. Schäuble, for Mrs. Merkel, for the majority of German people, because 70% of them support Mr. Schäuble. He's supposed to be the most popular politician in Germany. So German people cannot pretend to be innocent of what happens to my people, to me, to other European peoples.
It's rough. On the other hand, beware of what you borrow. That's kind of the word out of Germany. Here's talking with a reporter outside the German Bundestag on Friday. Veronika Bellmann, member of a center-right CDU party in Germany, spoke in opposition to Greek bailouts. She's interpreted here by Deutsche Welle English.
The situation continues to worsen, and before it deteriorates even further, it would be better to end the bailouts instead of approving more rescue packages without paying heed to the cost.
Of course, the Germans, not unaware of how all this can look. A few weeks ago, German comedians filmed a satirical video about the German reaction to the Greek debt crisis. In the video, the comedians have a conversation composed of headlines from German newspapers and lines from German Chancellor Angela Merkel's speeches. The video ends with a caption that encourages Germany to help the Greeks, but you get a sense of it here.
Die Schummelgriechen, die machen unseren Euro kaputt.
Und weißt du, was das Schlimmste ist?
I will translate. Headlines, as delivered by the comedians. These swindling Greeks are destroying our euro. And the worst thing is the Greeks are actually twice as rich as us Germans. Blind taxi drivers, married widowers, dead people drawing their pensions. Sell your islands, you broke Greeks, and the Acropolis as well. And at the end there you heard 99, no, no more billions for the greedy Greeks. No, 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 no. The comedian said, though, give them a hand. Constance Stoltenmuller, you were halfway through your analysis here and we had to go to a break. If you can pick it up. I mean, the charge is that Germany, after decades of working to restore its standing in Europe, has, with a kind of harsh, even brutal demands here, destroyed or spent some of that accumulated moral authority.
Okay, let's start with the facts here. Last Friday, 439 members of the Bundestag, much of Angela Merkel's coalition party, but own party, but not all of it, voted for the bailout.
As opposed to against it and central, goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so that's the central fact here. The Greeks are getting a very large loan, $86 billion over 3 years. They are paying a price for that in the form of a very harsh structural reform package. But the other thing I want to remind you of before I start mm-hmm. criticizing my own country's government mm-hmm. is that how many governments in Europe took an even tougher line than this, particularly the Finns, the Slovaks, and a couple of others. There is a big group standing behind the Germans on this one. Now, what do I don't mm-hmm. think that this was vindictiveness. I think that is way too harsh. I also don't think that this is dominance or a takeover of Europe or anything like that. What I do not like is I think that these conditions are in many ways, it seems to me that they are more stringent than the Greeks can possibly implement. And I think that they will need a lot of help with that. I don't know, however, of any way not to make that look like, you know, a sort of takeover of an administration of sorts. I really don't. But the reality is that the Greeks are never going to get on their feet unless they, you know, fix their administration and deal with their corruption from the bottom up. I think that's the honest truth. Because then you can give them any amount of development aid and it just won't help. Now, the other thing I don't like certainly is the tone some of the German media and some of the backbenchers have taken on this. But you tell me, I mean, every country in Europe has backbenchers and America has backbenchers, people who say harsh things. I think the mistake is to think that the entire country thinks that way. And I would also add that I have never seen so much reporting about Greece's politics, economy, society in German media. A lot of very sympathetic stuff, a lot of serious concern. And I think the overall line, and that is what polls have shown as well, is that that Germans really do want Greece to stay in the euro, but they also approve of Schäuble. So there you have it.
You say backbenchers, but I think I've seen polls, and we heard the Greek man in the street there referring to these. 70% of Germans being supportive of Wolfgang Schäuble in his pretty tough line here, that seems like widespread support.
Well, the one that I saw had 62, of mm-hmm, course. Okay. That's a clear two-thirds majority already. But the point is, people always say we should respect the Greek demos. There is a German demos, too. You know, let's not forget that. And Germans are worried about where this is going. This is, after all, the third bailout. The sums in question are huge. And Germany is currently being asked to take on a lot of responsibility. And you know, the Greeks, it has to be said, you know, it doesn't help if you put on a referendum and say then that you don't believe, you know, make a U-turn and then in the end say you've been forced to underwrite these policies, but you don't believe they're going to work.
All of which Greece did in the last couple of weeks.
Exactly. And so they lost, the Tsipras government, unfortunately, lost a great deal of sympathy. And the other thing that I think made them very unpopular with the German general public is that, as a lot of media reported, and I mean serious mainstream media reported, mm-hmm. the Tsipras government did no more than predecessor governments to actually undertake serious anti-corruption reforms and so on. All they did was to, you know, distribute patronage in ways that were a little different. None of this was sustainable, and I think this is what people all over Europe are concerned about.
We have callers.
Again, I don't like the tone. I think the policies are too harsh. I hope we're going to come to debt relief, but I do think that is all going to happen fairly soon.
Tone plus harsh policy, though, that's already a pretty substantive bag of issues right there. Callers for the two of you. Peter in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Peter, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hello.
I guess the thing for me is looking back on what the formation of the EU by Monnet and others to prevent World Wars I and II from ever happening again. And it one of the things was to try, I think, and it was Monet's wish, to understand the cultural differences that
yes.
had led to war.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, there seems the understanding is virtually lost in this economic fracas because Greece is just not like Germany. Germany, from the time of Bismarck on, essentially, order and discipline was exceedingly important for them. But it became dominant, and now it's sort of dominant again. So you bring that to bear on a country that's never really known that, and then to impose austerity, which is a dreadful idea in any case, but then to oppose austerity to pay back investors and loaners and all that, but to give them nothing that can allow them to grow, absolutely assures that your union. Then you ask yourself, you know, what does this union really stand for?
But Peter, does it work? I mean, I understand that a hyper attention to order can be too much. German might argue, what about just paying back money you've borrowed?
There is that. But you and the Greeks do bear responsibility. But the problem then becomes if you don't provide something that allows them to grow and prosper in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great problems with the EU anyway was really these cultural differences and that there was not closer unity with cultures. And to just bring the one thing on, I've always felt was an error that something, if you had an economic crisis like the one Wall Street managed to bring on the world, you would inevitably wind up with sides being picked and swords, not literally, but kind of economic swords being drawn, which is what we're seeing now.
Peter, I so appreciate your call. Hans Kundnani, what about it? If Germans at this moment, or over some years, as you say, feels the power or desire to make Europe remake it in its own image, make it more like Germany, and yet there are real cultural differences here. Does this project, the European project, still hang together, Hans?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question, actually, that Peter raises that is getting slightly lost in the detail of the discussion about Greece and whether there's going to be a Grexit and so on. Because I do think that regardless of whether Greece remains in the single currency or not, I at least am asking myself whether the EU is changing into something completely different as a consequence of the crisis, a much more coercive EU. Peter mentioned the sort of diversity of the EU, the fact that the Greeks are not like the Germans, and this was always, I think, Europe's strength, that it did have diversity. And the single currency was meant to be a project that would create convergence. In fact, we now know that what's happened in economic terms, at least, is that it produced divergence within the economies of the single currency. Since the crisis began then, it does seem to me as if there has been an attempt to sort of force through a kind of convergence, but very much along German lines. And I think that is very, very problematic, not least because of the history and the fact that it raises this question about hegemony within Europe. Peter mentioned Monet and the founding fathers mm-hmm. of the EU. At the beginning of the project, it was, in part, that the European Union, a way of overcoming hegemony, and in particular, the question of German hegemony within Europe. It was partly meant to constrain Germany, and obviously things have turned out somewhat differently. But I do think it's a very worrying development that the way that political conditionality is being applied, something which was originally associated with the IMF and then subsequently was imposed by the EU on candidate countries that wanted to accede to the EU, but now is also being applied within the EU. I think that does raise a question about whether the EU is becoming a very different type of organization. As one Italian critic put it the other day, a sort of bad version of the IMF. I think these are now sort of questions that we have to ask ourselves, whether there's a kind of a sort of creeping transformation of the EU taking place, where it's turning into something quite different from what the founding fathers had in mind.
Hans Kuntnani, please stand by in Berlin, and Constance Steltenmüller in Bonn in Germany. Let's get a perspective from outside Germany, but in Europe. Let's go to Paris in France, and Dominique Plion. He's professor emeritus at the Department of Economics at Paris Nord University. Dominique Plion, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
So, does all of this work together? Can you have democracy in Europe and European economic unity as envisioned?
Well, I think what happened recently is very worrying, as my two colleagues have said, about for two reasons. One, for economic reasons. I think what has been decided, you know, the new program, like mm-hmm. the previous ones, is doomed to be a failure, in the sense that the Greece is going back the road. It has lost about 25% of its GDP. The burden of debt has been increased by 50% in terms of percentage of GDP. The rate of unemployment has been increasing sharply, and so on. So the problem is to change the policies. And what I'm worried about is to see that the new program, in fact, is quite the same that the previous one, is harsher than the previous one, but does not take into consideration the fact that the previous one has been a failure. So this is my first concern. With respect to democracy, this is another concern we all have, I think, is that the way decisions have been taken, the way elections in Greece have not been taken into account, the way the referendum has not been taken into account, is a way to say democracy in Europe is not that important. And financial consideration, fiscal considerations are more important. And I'm very worried, because this throws an image of Europe now to the European people, which is very, very negative. And this is why I'm very worried, because in the coming future, near future, I'm afraid that for the coming elections, for instance, in the different countries, we'll have a lot of parties and voters going towards a nationalistic direction, which will, maybe come into power. And this is extremely, extremely dangerous for the future of Europe. So that is to say that the decision taken by the European people, I don't say by Germany. Germany played a very important role, even dominant role, but France also, and Austria and Netherlands and other countries. Mm. I don't want to focus only on Germany, but a group of dominant countries in Europe has taken the wrong decisions for the future of Europe. And they don't want to accept the idea that the Eurozone does not work. It has been, since the beginning, built on a very bad basis. It's only a currency, contrary to what Mrs. Merkel said at the beginning. And I heard that she says that it's a currency, but more than that. But it's not the case today. The euro is only a currency. It does not have any political and democratic dimension. And this is why it's a failure. And this is why I'm very, very worried about the future of the euro, because I'm in favor of the idea of having a common currency.
Constance Steltenmüller, you've got the French leader, Hollande, now saying you need more of a political union in Europe to make all of this work. And maybe with that, to avoid these charges that democracy is being trampled.
Well, a couple things here. I'd like to take up a point that's been made earlier. We keep talking about the German position. And if the past day's events have shown anything, there is really no such thing as a unified German position. In fact, the chancellor and her finance minister disagree with each other.
Nevertheless, a will has been expressed and imposed.
Yes, actually, the result is unclear, because it's the finance minister who, on the one hand, you might say is obsessed or very strong on rules and the law, but he is also the most ardent European federalist, or the more ardent European federalist of the two, and is the one who would agree with Mr. Plion that it would be preferable to have deeper political integration. That's exactly what he would like. And he would be quite happy then to have a more Eurozone democracy. That said, Let's keep in mind that the European Parliament is there and has been strengthened and plays a much stronger role than it used to.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Germany and the very, very tough negotiations over Greece's debt crisis. A lot of criticism being thrown around. Plenty of Greece. Everybody says they made their own mess here, but now also of Germany, with just how tough its demands on Greece have been, and the question arising whether the EU survives all this. Hans Kundnani is with us from Berlin and the German Marshall Fund of the United States. Constance Schaltenmüller is with us. She's at the Brookings Institution. Dominique Plion is with us. Professor Emeritus, Department of Economics at Paris Nord University, joins us from Paris today. My other guests from Germany itself. Here was the German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, talking in late June, saying that Greece would have to work to regain German trust. That's still kind of the message.
This Greek government has destroyed the last vestige of trust, and with it, the foundation for more assistance under the current program. How to restore trust? That's what Greece needs to think about now. We are prepared, as we said explicitly on Saturday, to continue assisting Greece and the Greek people, but they themselves must create the preconditions for that to happen.
Is Germany absolutely unanimous on this? No, of course not. Here was on Friday in the Bundestag in Germany. This is Gregor Gysi, leader of Germany's left party, taking issue with Schäuble's political attitude toward Greece, interpreted here by Deutsche Welle English.
The situation is fairly chaotic because Wolfgang Schäuble's actions are antisocial, anti-democratic, and anti-European.
Let's go to Jim in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just think that this whole thing, the whole union, is fraudulent. I mean, we're trying to keep this thing together with bubblegum. And my big question is, when are we going to kind of realize, you know, I'm very sympathetic to Greeks' plight. I think that this is overbearing what we're asking of them. But, you know, also on Germany's side, you know, something has come up recently. I've been reading a lot about how, you know, if these conditions were asked of them post-World War II, they'd be crushed, but they'd still be crushed. But I'd like your folks to speak about that. And then the cynic in me wonders whether some hedge funds that are deeply involved in the bond market are kind of wielding some power in the back.
Jim, I appreciate your call. Constance, speak first to this issue. You hear it raised again and again. After World War II, a lot of German debt was forgiven, so that with the Marshall Plan and so on, Germany would and did rise economically again. Germany ought to display more of that magnanimity here. What do you say, Constance?
Okay. I've actually been trying to really read up on the German debt issue, and I'm happen to be a trained international lawyer, and I have to tell you, it is so complicated we'd be spending hours. But the key point to understand here is that the main body of debt that we were talking about is the German punitive debts, or rather the punitive debts imposed on Germany in 1919 in the Treaty of Versailles after World War I to keep its economy down and prevent it from recovering. And the second time around, the Allies were wiser, and that's why they did the debt forgiveness.
I'm not sure that constitutes a counter argument exactly. I mean,
it does actually, because the situation is quite different. I'm sorry.
In the sense that Greece also feels itself under punitive debt. Now they took it on, but
yeah, there's a big difference. Seriously, Tom, it's just not the same thing. But let me go back to this. Mm-hmm. I am personally in favor of a debt haircut, okay? It's just these
meaning
historical
Germany would forgive some portion of the outstanding debt, Germany and others.
Well, it would have to be the IMF mm-hmm. and the European Central Bank who would have mm-hmm. to forgive them, because mm-hmm. Germany is not the creditor here. Mm-hmm. The private creditors have been bailed out. That was a couple of years ago, as I said. Mm-hmm. So you have to address that question, please, to the international institutions and the European institutions. But there is, I mean, the Germans are at least legally in the right to point out that there is a no bailout clause in the treaties. What they are in fact suggesting is something that in the outcome boils down to exactly that, which is an extension of debt maturities to 30 years or more. Yeah? And in fact, if you listen to, as I have, listen to international economists talk about Greece's debt, that's not their problem. Their problem is that they have a political institutions and an economy that is, like some of the poorest developing countries, just not capable of absorbing the kind of help that you would want to give them to be able to grow and invest. That's the problem here. You really have to start rebuilding institutions. Part of that is because of the duress they've been put under. Part of that is the policy failure of successive Greek governments. That's just the way it is. I'm afraid this is going to have to be one of those situations where both sides say to each other, okay, we made mistakes here. Let's try and find a constructive way of moving on. Because ultimately, nobody in Germany, I don't think, wants Greece, you know, to suffer, to become a humanitarian disaster, or to leave the EU. All of that is unthinkable to most of us. Trust me.
Dominique Plion, Wolfgang Schäuble has again over the weekend suggested that perhaps Germany or Greece should leave the European currency at least for a time. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think Germany may be the one who should leave the Eurozone. Because this country is, on economic grounds and political grounds, behaving in such a different way as a majority of other countries that you could reverse the proposal. Not Greek-sick, but Jerzik, I don't know how you could call it. So I think, you know, saying that, it shows that it's ridiculous to think in these terms. What we need is to work together and to create the condition for the future euro. And then, as I would agree with Constance, we need to have rebuild institutions, but not only in Greece. We need to rebuild institutions at the European level. Today, we don't have any good and democratic and strong political institutions in Europe. The euro is only a currency. It's an incomplete currency. It's not working like, for instance, the U.S. is a complete monetary union. Mm-hmm. The euro, we just build half of it with the central bank, with a money, a currency, that's all. So this is part of the problem. And it does not concern only the Greek people, but the countries like Germany, who recommended, when we have the Maastricht Treaty, what kind of monetary Europe we want. So at the beginning, we have a big problem of the conception of the Eurozone, and it's a wrong system. We have to change it, and I don't see in the German or in the French. Although in France, we have some discussions right now. President Hollande mentioned some idea of changing the institution. But I don't understand here Mrs. Merkel or Mr. Schäuble making proposal to reform completely the Eurozone and have really something quite different. And I would like to add
the same thing. Sorry.
Okay,
maybe. Schäuble and Hollande.
Well, but we don't have the same. You were saying that Mr. Schäuble is for federalism, but he's for a very authoritarian federalism. I don't think we have the same view of what is democracy and federalism when I compare what Mr. Schäuble is saying. Okay, what I understand and what we think in France, in some, I would say, progressist movements in France, it's quite different. What I want to say also something else. Mm-hmm. What we need now with respect to the debt crisis, in fact, it's not only a debt crisis, it's a European problem. We need to have a European conference on debt, okay, trying to settle all the problem on the side of debtors, but also creditors. Because the two sides should make compromise and the two sides should negotiate at the European level, not only all the countries, 28 countries against the only one country, Greece. We need to have a big European conference and to discuss all the problem of debt. And this would be a good way to start settling the problem of debt in Europe. And it's not what has been proposed. And this is unfortunate.
If I may...
Can I come in on that?
Yes, Constance, please.
Yes, look, the problem with that is that the nature of debt is different country by country. Part of the debt problem in Europe is sovereign debt. In other words, government debt. And the other is consumer debt. In other words, individual household debt. It's very different. And I don't think that you can address that kind of thing in an all-European conference.
The I was other talking thing, about I sovereign to, debt.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. In that case, but that then doesn't affect all countries similarly. And I'm not sure that makes sense. And I do want to say that the European Parliament has been empowered by the nation states recently, and it's playing a much stronger role. It has a role in the budgets. It has a role in controlling the European Commission. It's very different. Unfortunately, it also had a lot of fringe parties from the left and the right are now in the EP.
Hans Kundnani in Berlin, help us here on the cultural front, because it seems to come into play again and again. At the outset of our conversation today, you shared the view that Germany had over time come to see the European project as something to do with making Europe more like Germany or remaking Europe in its own image. Is the Greek crisis the proof that that's not possible, not even approximable? And if that's a word, and in that, if it's not, then what happens here? What about the cultural differences?
I mean, I think there are multiple reasons why it's not possible and not desirable, even if it were possible. But I want to come back, if I can, to something that Constanza said before, because I agree with nearly everything that Constanza's said, and particularly about the loss of civility in the debate, particularly in the last few weeks, which really worries me too. But on this question of the sort of degree of unanimity in Germany, I think this is a very important question, because it does go, I think, to the core of this issue about whether there's a sort of about Germany's role within Europe, but also about the kind of the sense in Germany that a lot of people, I think, increasingly have. There's a kind of an anti-German kind of hate campaign going on. I think from the perspective from outside of Germany, one of the things that certainly has struck me is actually the degree of consensus that there is within Germany. Clearly, it's true that there's not complete homogeneity, and there are at the fringes of the political spectrum different views that oppose Merkel's approach to the crisis. You just played a clip of Gregor Gysi you know, on the far left of the political spectrum, and the Greens also have a different view. Nevertheless, you do have a grand coalition in Germany of the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats. So that itself means that there is a kind of a joint position, you know, the position that the Merkel government's position is a joint position of the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats, and there are nuances between them. But they broadly share the same approach, it seems to me. And that is 504 out of 631 seats in the Bundestag. That's an enormous majority. And the opinion poll you quoted suggests, and others as well suggest, that, you know, that degree of kind of consensus is also replicated at the level of ordinary Germans.
And what are you saying with that? Is that the culture speaking?
The reason I think this is important is because this is, I think, the reason why foreign critics do tend to generalize and talk about the Germans and the German position. And I would defend that. I would say there actually is a German position, with these caveats that at the extremes of the political spectrum there are differences. But there is basically a German position. And one of the things that's puzzled many of us who consider ourselves to be on the center-left in Europe is how the SPD, from our perspective at least, seems to have moved so far to the right. By the way, also
the
in
Social
other
Democratic Party, yeah.
like the Netherlands. But it does look as if there are these kind of national positions, which I think is one of the most worrying aspects of the crisis. But I don't think the solution is simply to say there's this huge diversity of positions within Germany we shouldn't generalize, because I think there is actually a remarkable degree of consensus. This isn't like the US, where there is, you know, in the US the debate about economics is incredibly polemicized between two different kind of positions. But it's not like that in Germany.
Constanze, is it possible that Europe comes down to the view that, look, we just don't belong in the same boat? We do have cultural differences, and the teeth of these gears don't mesh properly.
Well, I mean, certainly, I think the best way to put this is to say that the European Union is a project that is stuck sort of halfway, halfway between a treaty between states and something that looks much more like the United States. And the debate, including within Germany, if you listen carefully, even between the Chancellor and Schäuble, if you look at what they say, is what is the ultimate outcome? How much farther should we go along this scale? And Schäuble, ironically, I mean, this is the deep irony of this story, is that Schäuble is on the side of the French president on this one, who thinks that if we don't have more unity in a formal and institutional way, then this European Union will always remain very vulnerable to the next economic and political crisis.
But Monsieur Pleyon warns of an authoritarian federalism.
Yes, and I think that's I just disagree with that, because I think that Mr. Pleyon and I come from politically different camps. I think of myself more as a liberal. I think I'm center, yeah, or just barely left of center, and I don't believe that. And I think that there is actually a great deal of cultural difference and respect for cultural difference in Europe, and there is a great deal of democracy and a great deal of listening to people's opinions. And so keep in mind that Merkel is much more attuned to those in her own country and elsewhere in Europe who say this is going too far too fast, and we don't want to have a more centralized, more federalized Europe. This is the real debate here.
Dominique Pleyon in Paris, you get the last word. Can it all work together, sir?
No, I think it's going to be, I'm fairly pessimistic. I think it's going to be very difficult. And I think the way the Greek crisis was handled by, Germany and some other countries like the Netherlands and Austria has been done in a very authoritarian way, not democratic. And it's very dangerous for the future of Europe. I'm sorry to say that. This is why I'm fairly pessimistic, because in the near future, you'll see votes, for instance, elections in Europe, which will show that people disagree completely with the way Europe is working now.
Dominique Pleyon at Paris Nord University in Paris, France. Thank you very much for joining us today, sir. Constanze Steltenmüller in Bonn. Wonderful to have you with us from the Brookings Institution there. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure.
And Hans Kuntnani at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, joining us today from Berlin. Mr. Kuntnani, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for all your comments on air and online, where there are many. Check them out. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jupp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, and Abby Ruzica. With help from Aidan Connolly and Lily Tyson, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.